I'm curious about building
open, authentic, loving relationship.
I'm curious about jealousy.
I'm curious about polyamory.
Does it just mean that you're fucking all the time?
How can I tell my parents that my partner is already married?
I'm curious about...
How do you know when you're too busy to have another relationship?
I'm curious about dominant and subordinate relationships.
I'm curious about sexual health.
How can relationships evolve with people as they grow and change?
Being as resilient as they were. And then there's other folks, I think, now that are really trying to avoid pain and discomfort as much as possible. Right. And neither of those are the right place to be.
Welcome to the Curious Folks podcast. For those challenging the status quo in love, sex, and relationships, my name is Effie Blue.
And I'm Jacqueline Misla. And today we're talking about how things suck. Specifically, accepting the fact that no matter the choice we make in our relationship or our life, something is going to suck.
And we're coming back from hiatus with this positive message for the people. Like a month off, and we're coming back and saying, everything sucks.
We were gone for a month, and that's our takeaway.
That was my takeaway from a month of hiatus. And that is a way that we're choosing to start part two of this year. Everyone, welcome back. I wonder actually if this is somehow reflective of the hiatus, the way that we've spent our hiatus.
Good question. I mean, my hiatus did not suck. So I went to Sicily for two weeks. So that's not sucky at all. I spent time at the beach. I did a bunch of stuff. I mean, I've done a lot of therapy and EMDR, and that can suck.
Yes. For sure. So
that may be personal growth. You know how fun that is.
Yes.
But no, I had a good hiatus. Did you have a good hiatus?
Yes. I also did some beaching and some travel. I went to a Greek island, an island called Kos. That was really nice. And then just because, you know, I'm run out of things to do, I decided to launch Curious Fox in a whole other language just for funsies and see how that turns out. But, you know, just experimenting, playing.
Yeah. Little side gig.
Little side gig, you know, in a language that I don't speak so well.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'll just be like editor in chief. But did it suck? No, I wouldn't say it sucked.
So this hiatus, I went to the movies, which is something I haven't really done a lot of. Once streaming happened, I wish I could go to the movies more, but I just don't prioritize it. Anyway, saw a few different movies, one of which was the new Barbie movie,
nice.
Which I know you have not seen yet,
no.
But it's on your list.
Yes.
In the recent Barbie movie, there is this modern day reference to a choice made famous by the red and blue pill in The Matrix. And Barbie is given a choice between a high heel and a Birkenstock. To either go back to blissful ignorance or to know the truth. And despite her desire to go back to the things they were, she's already started down this path of knowledge. So there is no going back. And I've been thinking about this. I've been thinking about how many of us have these like fork in the road moments, a point at which we have to choose. Like, should I stay in my relationship? Should I leave my job? Should I give myself bangs? Like these big and small moments where you got to pick a path with only the information that you have at hand. And how tough that is.
Sure. Decisions are hard.
Yeah, I think it is tough also because we know what we know. We don't know what we don't know, right? So we know what it's like to be partnered and employed and bangless. And we can imagine what it's like to be on the other side of that choice, right? Maybe we'll be happier, we'll be more successful, we'll be more fulfilled. But you don't know. What about you? How do you handle forks in the road? Like, are you good at making difficult decisions?
So I think for me, let me think about it. So I think there's like three ways this goes for me. I think some decisions, like if logical approach, right? Like if there are decisions that I can approach logically, I tell myself a story that the decision is made for me. If it's like, I can do a pros and cons, it's very clear. It's like, this is the right decision. And I can kind of just fall into this idea, well, that is the logical, reasonable decision to do. Like, and if the choice that needs to be made falls into my logical category where I feel comfortable approaching it logically, then I'm like over it. Like, I break it. Mm-hmm. Even if it's, even then, like, there's a part of me that's going, oh, we should have done, like, I wish we did the other thing. I'm like, no, like, that was the right thing to do. And I kind mm-hmm. of believe, or I hold on to a story that the decision is made for me. It's kind of outside of me. I think those ones go easy. And then mm-hmm. there is the intuitive approach where I feel like I know, like I just believe that I know the right decision. There's like something mm-hmm. inside of me that is decided. Mm-hmm. And it's intuitive. And it's like, I even though I can see why the other side exists, there's just nothing inside of me that calls me in that direction. So that's like mm-hmm. also an easy decision, I find. I find the intuitive ones similar to the logical approach. It's like, it comes with a knowing. And I'm over that. I'm like, oh, this is what my decision is. I'm over it.
So the logical assessment comes when there is no intuitive answer.
Right.
So you look into yourself, there's no clear answer, and you're like, all right, pros and cons lists. That's what's happening next.
Exactly. Got exactly. It. If the intuition doesn't kick in, mm-hmm. then I'm like, okay, logical. Like, can I just like work this out?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, okay, can I work this out? And I kind of can do the mental gymnastics of it and the math of the formulas and the algorithms. And I just come up with what feels like, or I imagine, or I believe, I guess, is logical. And I get to an answer. Like, I think if mm-hmm. those two paths are activated, I'm good. Like, I make a decision, I move on. Mm-hmm. Now, the third category is indecision, where mm-hmm. none of these things seem to work. I either have no interest. Like, I can't look into my feelings. Like, I just don't get any feedback. I don't get any intuition feedback. So I'm like, okay, so that isn't working. Logic either goes around in circles, like it doesn't resolve itself, or there is just like full on resistance, which mm-hmm. kind of like takes logical offline. And mm-hmm. and that's like when my avoidance kicks in. That's when I kind of freeze around the idea. I then put it in the back of my, you know, mental desktop, an open tab, and that's kind of like it starts to use up a bunch of CPU, a bunch of bandwidth, and the decision just is like, it's like it doesn't happen, and that sucks. And then I think that happens to me when there's a part of me that perceives the thing to be like high stakes, and it's like high stakes in a certain way. I have immigrated twice in my life, and I made those decisions fairly mm-hmm. fast. And I've moved like mm-hmm. continents and jobs that, you know, along with those continents. And, you know, I've made big stake decisions. It's a big stakes in a different way. Like, there's a part of me that decides it's high stakes in a certain way. And it has something to do with, I think my investigation tells me it has something to do with permanency. Like what I perceive to be permanent, right? So like, and there's silly things. Like the biggest one for me is like tattoo. I don't have any tattoos. Like I don't, because I just cannot decide on a tattoo. Mm-hmm. I can't ever imagine myself deciding on a tattoo. The idea of making such a permanent decision, then you like ink it into a body and that is what you have to live with for the rest of your life. I'm just like, holy shit, this is the highest stakes in the world, right? While, you know, while I'm like, you know, moving from continent to continent and, you know, making major decisions around relationships and like, you know, that big stuff. And then I'm like, well, how could possibly anyone decide on a tattoo?
Yeah.
Or like silly things like buying big things that I can't return, like big ticket items mm-hmm. for some reason mm-hmm. I can't return. And I'm like, I'm locked up, you know, signing 2-year contracts on a lease, you know, mm-hmm. big thing. For some reason, it feels totally. Already permanent.
Yeah.
So I think those, like there's a group of decisions that don't come easy for me. And I think I understand them. I understand the quality in those decisions that lock me up. And I'm working on those. It's actually emotional regulation. It's like nothing is permanent. There are only two permanent things in this life. This is to take life and to give life. Everything else is impermanent in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And I think I need to, is when I sit myself down and kind of have that talk with myself and be like, you know, like, let's just like get regulated and then try to make a decision. Then I can overcome most of those indecision moments.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a bunch of them. They just are permanent in their indecision. They just kind of just hang out in perpetual open tab until
never get decided on
unless I have to, like unless someone's hurting, I'm hurting so much.
Yeah.
You know, something has to be major for me to go back to a tab and be like, okay, fine, I'm going to make that decision. Yeah. Anyway, that's how I roll. How about you? How do you roll when it comes to a fork in the road?
I think you'll be shocked to mm-hmm. know that I take choosing very seriously. I want to know, well, first I want to know all of my options beforehand, right? So mm-hmm. I can scroll endlessly through trailers trying to decide what to watch just in case there's like a better movie out there that I haven't mm-hmm. seen. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm trying to figure out like what I want to eat, I will sit and like visualize myself like eating the thing mm-hmm. and imagine like which one will I enjoy more. Like I need to like assess all the things. Mm-hmm. And while I'm excellent at making quick and thoughtful decisions when it comes to work, I absolutely am terrible about it personally, I think. Mm. I mean, I think to your point, I think there's some things that I just know, and there's certainly the pro and con list, but I live in that indecisive period for much longer than I would like. You know, I was thinking about 20 years ago, I had to make a choice between a small walk up in Williamsburg or a rent stabilized pre-war sized apartment in Kew Gardens, Queens. Mm. And they both had good things and bad things on the pro and con list. And I remember that the decision left me like almost catatonic. Like there was, we joked about it, like literally a single teardrop just like streamed down my face, revealing the like inner conflict from within. But I was like stuck. And, you know, I ended up picking the apartment in Queens and lived there happily for several years. I lived there on my own. I lived there with my ex-husband. And then, you know, when we had our daughter, we lived there. However, even though it was certainly the best choice, I think, for me at the time, it still had its challenges. And so you also may be shocked to know that often the choices that I make are not as great as I thought they would be. Mm. They may be better than the alternative, but I think that living in my choice rarely is as bright and shiny as I imagined that it would be.
Mm. When I hear you say that, what comes up for me is this idea, like the grass is always greener, right? Mm. The grass is always greener mm-hmm. on the other side, you know? Mm-hmm. FOMO, you know, kids call it FOMO these days.
yeah. And again, to your point, it's not all the time, but there are definitely more moments that I'm comfortable with where I'm like, oh, but should I have? Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
Let me ask about this though. Is it correlated to how long it took you, how arduous it was to make that decision?
Mm.
Like, is your doubt about your question, your doubt about your decision, or like this idea that, oh, should I have gone the other way, is correlated to, you know, how difficult that decision was, or how much you were indecisive about it, or anything like that?
No, I think that when I am trying to decide something, I create this vision in my mind of what it's going to be like. So before I, you know, decide to buy a particular thing that, you know, maybe a article of clothing that I think is going to, that may be more expensive than I would want to spend, or like if I'm going to color my hair in a different way, or if I'm going to, you know, whatever the thing is, I create this like imaginative vision in my mind. Mm. So suddenly I'm going to wear that thing to like the opera, or like to like this fancy party on like a rooftop or whatever. Mm. And like, that's the perfect outfit for that thing. Now that those are not things that I do often. I've certainly been to operas and rooftop parties, but that's not a common thing in my life. But I have this vision, and when then I'm wearing the thing and it doesn't feel like that, or, you know, the hair color isn't, it's not blowing in the winds the way that mm-hmm. I expected, and like everyone like turning to look at how gorgeous I, like when it's not the vision in my mind, I'm like, oh, this wasn't, I mean, this was not a bad decision, but it wasn't as great as I thought it was going to be.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the impact of your decision, like what you imagined the decision is going to afford you.
Mm-hmm.
isn't quite living up to what you imagined, then you're like, maybe I should have gone the other way.
Yeah, I think so. Or again, maybe it's not even that I should have gone the other way. It's that I don't think that I looked at the downsides as much.
Mm.
I knew what my current, it's like what I said before, I know what I know, I don't know what I don't know. I know what my current situation feels like. Mm. I have a vision of what the other situation would be like. Mm. And so I gamble on it. I'm like, let's try that thing.
Mm.
And then, you know, then when I'm in the other situation, I have to assess, does this feel better or worse than where I was before?
Yeah, because I think people, this idea that the grass is always greener, right? You only think that when your grass sucks. Like no one's happy with the grass. It's like lush, it's like green, right. Soft. Yeah, like right. Beautiful, right. Bouncy, bountiful mm-hmm. grass, and goes, oh, it's greener on the other side. You only think that when you are right. In some way dissatisfied with your with
right.
Your
it's
grass.
Like patchy, it's starting to turn brown, and you're right. Yeah.
And I think in those cases you imagine like the other side is your salvation. Like you imagine because you, in those moments, the only pain you're imagining is the pain that you are holding on to, like the, like mm-hmm. How ugly or how unsatisfying your grass is, and then mm-hmm. you're like, wow, there's this other side, and it's greener, and I think mm-hmm. you think that's your salvation. So on your side, you are in the pain of it, and on the other yes. side, you're comparing it to mm-hmm. all the good of the other side. You're not comparing pain to pain. Joy to joy, you're comparing pain to joy of the other side. I think that's the right. this is where the grass is greener on the other side, I think, falls down as an idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, essentially it's right. What's happened? My current state sucks in some way. And if I choose this other thing, then I will be happy. Then, right. you know, all of right. my needs and my dreams will be fulfilled. Right. And of course, you know, that's simplifying it. I don't think in terms of in that way, but I do think there's a part of me that has this grander vision of what life will be like if whatever I choose, whatever fork in the road.
Sure.
And then I can sometimes find myself disappointed or surprised even when it's not that.
Yes. And I think in addition to that, with social media, you see so many other sides, like you see so many other mm-hmm. yards mm-hmm. That appear to be greener than yours.
I mean, certainly people are sharing the best parts of their lives, right? They're sharing the highlights. And so you're comparing, what's the expression? You're comparing your behind the scenes to other people's highlights reel.
Right.
So I think that's true. And I think that people also then not only show you the best, but really, really advocate for their choice. Mm. Really just, you know, say like, this is the right decision. Like I chose well. Mm-hmm. So I chose to have kids. That was the right decision. Right. I chose not to have kids. That's actually the better decision. And so each person is like creating these camps of like, my thing is the best thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're like, did I make the right decision? Am I in the right camp? There's a mm-hmm. whole other camp over there. And yeah, mm-hmm. I can definitely see that. I think we feel it the most poignant in matters of the heart as well. I mm-hmm. think it's like relationship structures and, you know, difficult decision of having kids and not having kids, if that is a choice mm-hmm. for you, of course. So I think it becomes really poignant when I think the closer the decision is to your sense of identity and your sense of safety is, I think, mm-hmm. is when it becomes the most poignant. And this idea of like, am I in the right camp? Doubt, FOMO, you know, greener mm-hmm. grass on the other side, all that stuff comes into it, I think.
Mm-hmm. And so I agree with you. I think with that in mind, with the knowledge that things will suck and the knowledge that people often share the parts that don't suck, I think that we have a responsibility, you and I, to tell mm-hmm. the whole story.
Yeah. The truth and nothing but the truth.
That's it. We got to get down. Right. To admit that no matter what, frankly, there's going to be some disappointment. There's going to be some unmet desire. There's going to be some pain.
And so we are going to take a short break. And when we get back from break, we're going to tell more of the story. I think we are going to share more, including what sucks about your current relationship choices and my current relationship choices. So if you want to hear all the things that suck, then stay tuned.
Hey, folksy friends. It's time for some audience participation. We have three fun, quick, and easy ways for you to be involved with Jacqueline, me, and the podcast and help us challenge the status quo in love, sex, and relationships. Back in episode 89, for Halloween of yesteryears, we had fun turning our relationship fears into rooms of a haunted house of relationship horrors. For example, my fear of getting stuck in a relationship escalator without any power to shape my own destiny turned into a room where upon entering, you stepped into a Stairmaster-style contraption with the exit door at the top. Your attempts to get out just kept you on the Stairmaster, with no joy, no design, just drudgery of social compliance and misery. Scary even thinking about it now. This year, for Halloween, we want to open the haunted house once again, but this time with rooms from you. So here is the invitation. Jump onto episode 89 if you haven't heard it already or need a refresher, and then get creative. Pick that one fear that you have when it comes to love, sex, or relationship, and see if you can design your room that represents it. Once you're done, get your voice memo app on your phone and tell us all about it. Then send it to listening@wearecuriousfoxes.com. You don't need to include your name if you don't want to.
Next, in my 4.5 minutes of spare time, I opened an Etsy shop. It's a place for me to create products that I want to wear and use, from bags for femme lesbians and bisexuals who want to make it very clear that we are not just allies, to shirts that declare that I'm with him and her, to tote bags that proclaim that I've got 99 problems and white, hetero, mononormative patriarchy is basically all of them. The Etsy shop is filled with fun pieces, each designed to help us challenge the status quo and celebrate the beauty of pride. Use code PODCAST to get 10% off through the end of September. And if you're in the U.S., get free shipping straight to your door. Visit the Roots and Wings Gallery at Etsy or find the link below in our show notes or on my Instagram bio.
Finally, one huge way you can support the podcast is by connecting with the show on your fave podcast app. This can be a heart, favorite, or a follow button. Also, rating the show and leaving a review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. We don't have any advertisers or sponsors, so we rely on our community of listeners to spread the word. If you enjoyed the show, or if any of the episodes have meant something to you, write a quick review as soon as the episode is over.
And remember that the best way to stay in contact with us is via our newsletter, where you'll get new episode drop emails, monthly digest, and themed emails, where we curate and share all of our episodes about opening up, jealousy, sex, and more. Jump onto our website, wearecuriousfoxes.com, and sign up to the newsletter. And while you're there, check out our blog posts, resources, reading list recommendations, and so much more.
And we're back. Okay, so before the break, we named the fact that no matter how much information you have before you make a decision, and how great people tell you things are on the other side, you will have to contend with the things that are difficult, unsatisfying, and simply just painful.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, classic quote, Buddha says, life is suffering. Everyone's heard this. And I have to say, yes, life is suffering. If you dig into that idea, though, what you'll find is this is not the perfect translation of what he was saying. Of course, these things get lost in translation. But if you dig a little bit, the less catchy but more accurate to the sentiment translation is something like life does not satisfy, which obviously not mm-hmm. so catchy, which essentially means like nothing is perfect. Everything comes with some level of compromise, letting go, adapting, accommodating, etc. And in fact, he says the source of suffering is attachment, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the opposite of all the things that I've just said. So it is attachment and a fixation on something and the unwillingness to compromise, unwillingness to let go, unwillingness to adapt or accommodate is where sort of suffering lives, right? And so the idea is when we're making decisions is not to avoid the unavoidable pain, but find a way to accept it, find a way to make room for it, right? So just realizing essentially no matter what we pick, something is going to suck. It's just the way the world is. And
yes,
what we want to talk about is, first of all, like talk about all the things that suck, and also like, and then what? And then how do you make a decision, right? Like now what? Now that we agree, everything, every choice, every path down the road.
Now that we've burst your bubble, no matter what you choose, everything's going to suck.
Exactly. So. There are no right choices. They're just like the decisions that you make.
And less sucky ones.
Some less sucky ones. But ultimately, everything's going to come. It's going to suck. And I see this a lot with my practice, right? I see this a lot. You know, you get people come in and they are convinced transitioning into another relationship structure is the right thing. Like it's going to be the right decision. One person comes in, like they can only think of all the amazing things that's going to happen once they become non-monogamous. So, you know, a monogamous couple comes in, one of them is like, you know, they cannot imagine anything going wrong. All they can imagine is like how wonderful the relationship is going to be, or at least that's what they're articulating. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the adventures and all the fun and all the things that is going to be good and like how much they want it, how it feels right, all that kind of stuff. And then you get the other person who's kind of swinging hard the other way. Like all they can mm-hmm. imagine is, you know, this is going to be the worst decision that we've ever made and mm-hmm. it's going to suck 100%, right?
Yeah. And those two people, right, they marry each other. That's
and then they're married. And then they're married.
And then they come.
Right, right. Yeah, and
that's real.
While they do that, they have forgotten how much monogamy sucks. Mm-hmm. So because everything sucks, right? Not because monogamy sucks as like a separate thing. It's like they've just like, both of them actually have kind of forgotten to assess like the sucky parts of their existing choice, right? Mm-hmm. And you know the truth is they're both there are benefits on both sides. We know this, like very top level stuff. Monogamy can bring consistency and structure and safety and security, while it's being kind of like monotonous and potentially stagnant, you know, mm-hmm. over the course of the years. You know, non-monogamy, yes, it can be fun and full of variety and adventure and, you know, newness. And of course, it's harder to handle. There's instability, there's insecurity, you're swimming against the current of the social norms mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. So there isn't like, this is the choice. Mm-hmm. It's really about what decisions are we going to make and mm-hmm. how are we going to handle the outcome of our choices. And we're going to talk about what that can look like in a minute.
Right, because it's not objectively that one is better than the other.
Right.
It is what is better for me.
Right.
And so, of course, there are going to be positives to any of the choices that we make. But I think it's realizing that there will be downsides to any of the choices that we make. And are we okay with those downsides? Yes. And is whatever we choose the best option for us? Mm-hmm. And how do we do that kind of thinking?
Right.
How do you do that? Yeah. How do you do that kind of thinking? How do you figure out for yourself when you are kind of picking between your options? You said before that is you either do a pro con list or that you intuitively just know. Is that also true within your relationships?
Yes. When it comes to matters of the heart, I kind of think of it in a two axes situation, which obviously matters of the heart and a math equation doesn't sound they should fit together, but they kind of do in my head. So when I, you know, when I'm deciding on like the sucky when it comes to relationships, I think of like one axis is the person, right? How I feel about the person. And then the other axis is the circumstance, right? The circumstances in which we are deciding to connect and relate to one another. So this could be anyway from a relationship structure, which is what we talk of the most in this podcast, but also like our life circumstances. And like in my current relationship, the two axes are kind of interesting to me. On the person axes, it's, you know, I am very fond of this person. They're German. So there's a great word in German. It's verliebt and it's cute. It essentially means like in love, somewhere between like in love and infatuated and like new relationship energy, like all mixed up. It's just like a German word called verliebt. And so like I keep going around saying I'm verliebt. So then that's kind of where I am. And this person is, you know, a wonderful person. And if in the good stuff, right? They're worldly, they are multilingual, they've traveled the world for many years. So there's a lot of experiences that overlap, which I find it doesn't overlap with many people for me. So like there's this stuff that I'm like, wow, this is amazing. We're both like dancers and we find healing and grounding and dancing and also a connection between us through dancing and movement and that kind of stuff. So there's like all this like good stuff. And then the thing that really fits on an axis for me is we have a big age gap, like over 10 years, maybe, let me get this right, like 15 year age gap where I'm older, right? So like the other way around, whole other story. This way around is what it is. And when I think about it, and I've thought about it in many ways, and there's a whole episode coming on this, I can definitely make a pros and cons list for this, right? Like there's a bunch of amazing stuff and there's a bunch of like, there's like a sucky stuff that I'm aware of. On the other axis of like lifestyle or circumstance, we have a multi-hub life, means that we bounce from hub to hub. and which is adventurous and fun and new and exciting. Both hold multiple passports and have our hearts set in certain locations in the world. And we are doing the bouncing and making it all work, which looks mm-hmm. great.
If I was going to say, yes, yours would be the Instagram account that I would follow.
So I was like, just going to say, if only you post on Instagram.
Yes. We're in Greece this week, and now right. we're in Germany, and then we're yes. going to go to Bali, and then we're yes. going to be in this place. I'm like, exactly. oh my gosh, just you all, I can picture it like holding hands in like with different backdrops,
yes.
always chasing the sun. So like, yes. there's like never, it's eternal sunshine for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's that. Yeah. No, exactly. What you don't know is that the reason why he went to Kos is because his visa ran out for the country that I'm in. So he can't come into the country. So I had to go out, and it's the nearest place that I could go was this, you know, island. And he, you know, flew in. I took a boat, and then this is the sucky, right? Like this floating around the world comes with bureaucracy and paperwork and schedules and, you know, cars, buses, boats, trains, you know, a lot of organizing of that and money, like travel costs money. You know, I have a dog that needs to be taken care of that I have to make arrangements for. So this like beautifully, if only we Instagrammed, beautiful Instagrammable life yes. also has a bunch of sucky stuff that is hard to deal with. And, you know, we have to make some hard decisions. We have to make some practical decisions where otherwise maybe we would make some romantic decisions. Like that's other thing. Yeah, like that's like amazing life and this like sucky fallout that is really not fun.
Yeah.
And I know I know people are listening like, oh, what was you? Like your life is great.
Oh, I'm so sorry that you have to travel the world with a gorgeous 6'3" German man. Oh yeah, poor Effie.
Yeah, woe is me. Woe is me. And this is what I mean. Like this is the thing that I think we need to understand. It's like this amazing life, which I'm grateful for, also has a bunch of sucky stuff that
I remember, you know, talking to you when you were, you know, as with every relationship, there are some hard moments and some hard conversations, and you sharing your frustration. It is harder to have a tough conversation from multiple countries away. And, you know, when you're in a difficult conversation and afterwards you just want to hug each other and kind of have that closeness, that in order for you to arrange that took boats and planes and all the things just to be in the same room so that you can have the hug at the end of the argument. Like that really does suck. I know we're joking, but like that is really hard when you miss someone, when you wish that you had that physical touch and that connection, or again, just like there, or time zones just to figure out when you're talking to each other. That sucks.
Yes. It's amazing. And it sucks. Okay, what about you? Tell me your sitch.
My sucky thing.
What's amazing and what sucks?
I know. I have so many to choose from. One of the things that I've talked a little bit about is what non-monogamy looks like for me is different than what I envisioned it would be, in that I was married. We opened up the relationship. We both were non-monogamous coming into it, but at some point about 4 years in, we decided, okay, let's now like do this thing. And it was a rocky start, to put it mildly. Then my vision was, I'm going to go out there and date. I'm going to go on an adventure. Again, the vision in my mind is I'm in Greece. I'm on a beach in Greece. Yes. I am meeting some beautiful tanned person who's like with an accent, and we have this like wonderful like 2 weeks together. And then I come back and I picture myself like laughing and making out at parties and, you know, dancing and being whisked away to this place and that place. And that's not what it is. Now that does exist for people. So let me say that is I've just described someone's life.
Yes.
And that sounds amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the truth was that wouldn't necessarily fit into the life that I have right now and kind of my values and my priorities. You know, I have a 12-year-old daughter. And so like just taking impromptu trips to Greece all the time is not the thing that I can afford me. And I also just am who I am. I remember at some point I lived abroad. I lived with my ex-husband in Panama for a year. And leading up to it, I was saying to myself, I'm going to do yoga every morning. And then I'm going to go to the park and I'm going to watercolor. And then I'm going to run back. And I didn't do any, because I don't do those things, right? I don't do those things now. Yeah. I don't. So the fact that I thought that I would go there and do those things. Mm. And so the truth is, when I was dating, it was hard. I like would immediately relationship it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a few people were like, this is moving a little too fast, because I've been in full on relationships mm-hmm. since I was 16 years old. So I don't really know what it is to date. I think maybe that's why I have that vision in my mind, because mm-hmm. I'm like, this is what it's like, right? But I'm better at like being in relationship. I like the mm-hmm. settledness of that. I love like first kisses and new relationship energy and like going on dates to different places. I love that. But I don't love, like, I hate actually date. Like, I hate, do they like me? Are they going to text me back? Should I, the game playing I'm not interested in. Like, so anyway, I made that decision. I'm in the two relationships that I'm in and like shut it down after that. So like opened it up and then like those two relationships and then shut it down. And it's great in so many ways. Like it fulfills me in so many different ways. And it also still sucks because this like freedom and adventure that I went into non-monogamy for, I don't have. Mm. I just have two sets of household expenses. Mm-hmm. I have these two amazing people who I love. But so that's really hard.
I've also heard you talk about how you also gave up a lot of personal time, because that's what two relationships say. Like you don't get that's much time to yourself. And that's right. You know, that's another thing that I know that you talk about. It sucks. Like there's no Jackie time. There's like one household or the other household. Right. And then in the middle.
That's right. And both of my partners have that time. Mm. My wife is alone for a week. My partner's alone for a week. So they both get their like, you know, whatever they do for the week on their own, they get to have that. And I'm never alone. Mm. I'm never alone. And so I'm trying to carve out spaces for that. But I know that I've made this choice. And again, being in it, I wouldn't choose the other side, but I wouldn't have chosen this actively. Like this happened. I was dating and, you know, fell in love. And then it evolved from there and we moved in together and all the things. But this wasn't the plan, Effie.
I get that. Okay, let me ask you this question then, though. So given where you're at, you went into it. It wouldn't be your active choice. So that's kind of interesting in the big topic of this conversation, right? Like you weren't aware that you were in a particular crossroads or in a fork in the road. You're wandering around, you're wandering down the road and you're like, oh, here we are.
I think I realized it when I was a few steps into the fork, right? So like at some point there was a transition from casually seeing my partner to being more serious. Now I don't remember, I wasn't like at that crossroads in an aware way. I think we like said, I love you and we're like, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Like I'm down this path. Mm-hmm. And so there was the opportunity for me to decide, okay, I want to turn around and go the other way. Like I definitely had that option and decided, no, I'm going to keep down this particular path that I'm on, even though this wasn't the path that I meant to get on. I'm enjoying it. And so I'm going to keep going. And it, again, so many things that are wonderful, but there's a lot also that sucks.
Mm. Okay. Then let me ask though, just between us, how often do you think the grass is greener? Just between, no one's listening, just between you and me.
Well, when I have a crush on somebody, I think the grass is greener.
Sure.
When I want to travel on my own or go out without having to like check schedules and, you know, think about hurt feelings and stuff, like the autonomy and freedom that I wanted. Yeah. And seeing other people in the beginnings of their relationships or the beginnings of like dating and like the, again, like sleeping with someone for the first time or kissing them for the first time or like, you know, that energy around, I don't know, just getting to know someone in the beginning. You speak on the phone for hours. You're saying this. You speak on the phone for like 2 hours because you're like learning everything from scratch. Now, like my messages are just like, hey, good morning. Good morning. Did you sleep well? I did. What about you? Like that's, you know, sure. I'm like, so then it feels like the grass is greener.
I think the grass is greener when I'm packing and at the airport. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why am I making these decisions? I hate packing and I hate airports. That's when I'm like, I just want to live in a, you know, in an orange grove and grow my vegetables and take care of my cow and chickens and not ever set foot outside. But then I do. Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Okay. Yeah.
The other choice that I've spoken less about on the podcast is my decision to get divorced. I was married to my ex-husband for over a decade, and we have a daughter together, and we were together since college. So this was a really formidable time in my life. And we decided not to be together anymore for a number of reasons. You can listen to former podcast episodes to explore all those things. But it was the right choice for us not to be married anymore. And at the time, I was truly heartbroken. But I was also focused on all the things that could be possible after the divorce, probably out of necessity. I thought about the freedom that I would have to pursue non-monogamy and the relief of not being engaged in the same arguments over and over, and the ability to set up my household and all the things with my daughter based on what she and I wanted without having to compromise with him, and the ability to explore who I was, you know, after a decade outside of my relationship with him. There was a lot that I was looking forward to. And yet, this choice also has a lot that sucks. I mean, first and foremost, just the sadness that my daughter has experienced as a result of the divorce. And her always missing one of us and always, again, having to travel back and forth, which I know very well how hard that is. I can only imagine, you know, for her birthday this past year, her wish was just that we would all be together under the same roof for a night, play games and watch movies. I know. Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
Like, sad. You know, that she was just like, out of all the things in the world she could pick, she was like, can I have a night where I don't have to pick one of you and have to go to one side or the other? That just, that was awful.
And then she got two sets of presents and got over it.
Right. Exactly. We got separated when she was two, and she's 12 now. So it has been 10 years, and she's still sad every switch day. It is still hard for her. So that sucks. Something I didn't think about, but also really sucks, is like the end of shared traditions and like inside jokes and routines. And you know, when I was married, we used to, anytime we traveled, we would get an ornament, a Christmas ornament for the tree from every location. And so we have them from different countries. And then each Christmas, it was amazing because we would set up the tree and we'd hang these ornaments and really reflect on these adventures that we've had together. And then when we split, I think he has most of them. I have some of them and he does use them, but I don't, because in my house, my wife and her family has like ones from generations, so they put those up. So I just don't know what to do with these. And every time I travel, I see an ornament, I feel a little sad, like this tradition that we had, or again, these memes where we used to make fake radio commercials together and like movie ads. Like there were just these things that were really sweet and amazing, and we don't do those things anymore, and that's sad. And then the ability, frankly, is particularly as being a parent, to complain to someone and to feel seen when your kid acts like an asshole, like that is something that I did not consider, is that of course her dad and I love her and would die for her and all of the things, right? So we can complain about her and be like, "Mom, this one, can you believe, you know," and like say all the things and like text each other and be like, "Ugh," right? If her dad reached out and complained, I was like, "Oh my God, she's such an asshole." I'd be like, "For real, she really is." Now, if my wife turned to me and was like, "God, she's such an asshole," I'd be like, right? Like, I feel differently about that.
Of course.
You know, same with my partner. Like, if they're critical of her, I'm like, yes, totally. Like, it's interesting. I will certainly complain about parenting with both of them. But when they start to agree or like add on, I'm like, all right, we're going to stop the conversation right here. And so there's just something about in the moment being in a parental struggle and turning to the person, you know, next to you and either venting or getting support or tag teaming things in the middle of a tantrum. Like, I had to ride those things out on my own, you know, as does he. And we can text each other in between, but it's not the same thing as like being able to like tag someone in and be like, "I got to go take a walk. Like, you're up." And do that. And so as well as we can co-parent, there is something about parenting together and this like family unit, if you will, that I didn't realize I would miss, and that sucks.
I get that. I get that. I think even a decision like divorce, where you think that, you know, people divorce each other because they don't want to be, you know, like because of all the sucky stuff, right? Like divorce is the result of the suckiness outweighing the good, and you're like, I'm out of here. It's interesting that post divorce, when you look back, like what you feel, what you're telling me, the suckiness is post divorce is all the good times. That was available beforehand. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
All the good times that were, and all of the kind of intimate moments that are lost now. Like we, again, I think we have a great co-parenting relationships and are friendly and all those things, but there's just, you know, there was, he was my friend for so long, and like for to not have that anymore is hard.
I get that. I get that.
So I have a question for you actually, because I've been also thinking about this. Talking about divorce and thinking about the pain and the struggle of it, there's an interesting shift that I've noticed across generations when it comes to tolerating pain, right? Like our parents and our grandparents not only dealt with pain, but they wore it like a badge of honor, right? The boomers lived through war and poverty, and they raised Gen X who were very like rough and tumble, right? Like they were like kids playing on the roofs and with BB guns and like, right? They had this, they were told in the morning to like get on their bikes and leave and not come back till dark. So they have this like very different life. And then, but then Gen X raised millennials and Gen Z in a different way. And now the narrative about pain is different, right? There was this awareness of, oh, that sucked, right? The way, like our parents didn't seem to care about us. They didn't seem to pay attention, right? Like our trauma was not acknowledged. Like we're going to do that. We're going to listen to our kids. We're going to validate them. We're going to try to minimize the amount of pain that they experience, which is all wonderful. But now maybe we went a little bit on the other end. I don't know. You know, I look at my daughter and her experience, and her disappointment comes much sooner than mine did when I was younger. And I think that we are told that if something hurts, it's not good for us. If it is, something is difficult, if a relationship is difficult, it's time to move on. And that's not necessarily true. Michelle Obama at some point was talking about her relationship with Barack and said that there was a good 10 years in their marriage where she just didn't like him. And this was like during his, the beginning of his career and, you know, raising the children and all that stuff. And she's like, so we had to get past that. And I remember thinking, my God, 10 years,
10 years
where you were like, I don't like that person, but I see the long picture. And so I'm going to tolerate this pain for the greater good. I think that there's less of a tolerance for that. There's more like, ooh, this doesn't feel comfortable. This feels like it's, I'm in pain. This feels difficult. This hurts. That is a sign that I need to be doing something else. And I don't know how true that is. So I'm curious about your thoughts.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, on the pain thing with the newer generation, I think I'm curious about that, right? Because I know for myself that sometimes my resilience to pain is too much. Like I would estimate somewhere between like 20 to 30%. Like I should have said, I should have stopped or said no or cut it off or, you know, whatever the boundary is, like 20 or 30% earlier, whatever the unit is. Right. But because I'm resilient, you know, I know I can keep going, so I'll just do it. You know, and that looks like me, you know, not eating for hours as I'm working or like, you know, holding my, you know, and that all the way to staying in relationships for longer because I can, you know, tolerate the pain longer. So I think there's something about when it's too much, too resilient, too hardened, you know, too willing, you know, there's that, right? But I can definitely, this idea of too resilient. And then I think hard swing the other way, which is like, if the sun doesn't shine, I'm going to cry all day. Like that kind of like, you know, being so deeply affected by something that is so out of your control and you have no resilience that you'll just like crumble if somebody like looks at you the wrong way. Right. I think probably the place in the middle is where we want to be. Right. Like, you know, you want to be resilient, but not so resilient that you're suffering. And we'll talk about that in a minute, right? Or you don't want to be, you know, so soft that you can't handle what regular life throws at you. So it's like finding that middle ground.
And to be fair, I mean, I think millennials and Gen Z and that they've had to deal with stuff that the other previous generations didn't have to deal with, sure. Right? So like being able to afford just to live, frankly, being able not only to get a house and have a family, but to be able to afford to live. Like, I don't want to undermine what our generations now have to experience. It's more about the way in which we look at pain. And I think what you're saying makes sense. There are some folks that almost felt like drawn to it, like and felt a real, again, sense of honor and pride for being as resilient as they were. And then there's other folks, I think, now that are really trying to avoid pain and discomfort as much as possible. Right. And neither of those are the right place to be. Both of those are going to be uncomfortable. Everywhere you're going to stand is going to be uncomfortable. But I think both of those feel like too extreme.
Yes. And I think we need to make a distinction between pain and suffering, right? We talked earlier about, life is suffering and sort of actually what Buddha was trying, well, not what he was saying, just how we translate it and understand it. But there is a distinction between pain and suffering, right? And pain does not need to be the end of a relationship or a situation, right? So, for example, the pain that I feel the morning after a hard workout, right? Mm-hmm. That pain, I'm okay with. That pain, I'm happy with. That pain really gives me some joy and a sense of satisfaction. I am clear what it affords me. It reminds me that I'm healthy. It reminds me that I, worked out, that I have something good for myself. So like I can totally tolerate that pain. So you're looking at a couple and one of them works 18 hours days for whatever reason, right? Let's say they're, committed to their job, there's passion, or they're making a lot of money. And the other partner is, aware of this, and maybe they're looking at maybe a longer term relationship. Maybe they're thinking about getting married, right? And you need to really look at that 18 hour workday and decide what that's going to be like for you, right? If you don't really go through it and realize, okay, yes, there are pros, like there's going to be more time for myself, we'll have the weekends together and, it'll be fine. And we're going to live, comfortable life because he's making a lot of money, all that kind of stuff. And if you just focus on that stuff and you don't really realize that, the person who works 18 hour days probably isn't going to be that fun over the weekends. And, there's going to be times it's going to be lonely and, there's going to be potentially resentment if you don't really like work things out with an 18 hour day. You probably don't have time to work things out all the time. So are you a type of person that can thrive in this situation? Right. And if you don't think about those things, and if you don't really think, okay, am I going to be able to thrive? Really ask that question. And then go into it knowing, I will thrive. And these are the hardship that I need to put up with. This is the sucky that I need to subscribe to. Mm-hmm. And I knowingly subscribe to that. Yes, it's going to be painful, but it's not going to be lifelong suffering or end up, in a divorce. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if you don't do that, if you only imagine like fun weekends and like endless resources and no money problems and, late night sexy time, and you don't really subscribe to the other stuff. And when you are there, when you are married, when you are partners, when you are life partners and you rely on each other, and this person is at work, and you're just suffering this idea that they're just not there for you because you haven't fully considered what the whole thing is going to look like. Right. And that, I think that's the difference between pain and suffering.
And then there's that moment where if you do share that, like, hey, this is hard for me, the other person, I can picture this in so many scenarios. Well, you knew what you were signing up for. Sure. I've always been like this, right? You knew this is what was going to come. But what I hear you saying that makes sense is it is the surprise and the lack of preparation for the sucky parts that makes the difference. So, for example, I'm thinking about, again, my journey into non-monogamy and always identified as non-monogamous even before I knew what that word was. So like knew this was the thing I was going to do, but totally thought about all the positives and knew like, well, there's going to be jealousy and there's going to be times that are hard and this, and there are going to be some tough conversations. Like I absolutely acknowledged it. What I didn't do is that second piece of, okay, I know there's going to be jealousy, but how do I act when I am jealous?
Right. Right, exactly. Right?
Like I become suspicious, I become obsessive, I become manipulative, I become, emotionally distracted. Like when I am jealous, it is not fun times. And so knowing, oh, there's going to be jealousy, there's going to be tough conversations. And wait, what am I like when they're tough conversations? Like, what am I like that I didn't do? So there was this element when my wife and I struggled with the non-monogamy piece, I was shocked. I'm like, this is I picked this. I introduced this. This is the thing I wanted my whole life, my whole, you know, relationship life. How could I be feeling this way? But if I looked at my relationship with my ex-husband and relationships before, I really could have predicted a lot of how I would have shown up. Sure. And I was like, how do I show up on that? Like, I could have, but I didn't do that. I did not prepare for the pain. And so it surprised me when it arrived.
For sure. Yeah. I think that's why I talk about this idea of like subscribing to the pain, like subscribing to the sucky. Because in my mind, in this idea of subscribing, you're kind of saying like, this is what I'm going to be dealing with long term. I know this thing exists. It's going to be a part of my life, and I'm going to find ways to adapt, to accommodate, to work with, whatever the compromise, whatever the action is. I think that's what I mean about subscribe, like actively subscribing. I'm going to deal with the sucky, not like, oh, this sucky exists, and put it to one side. But like, this is a lifelong practice when it comes to this relationship. I'm going to, you know, jealousy and non-monogamy is a great example for this. So honestly, I've been doing what I'm doing for a long time now, and I've met, you know, dozens and dozens of couples and you know, various other more sims. And I really never have met anybody who does not feel jealousy. Some people feel it more than others. Some people are triggered in different ways than others. And I really never met anyone who's like, I never feel jealous in my non-monogamous relationship. I'm like, nah, even at the beginning, you never did. Like right in the first time your partner went out on a date, or the first time you saw your partner, you know, having sex with somebody on a, you know, at a play party, or like, there was no point in your relationship that you didn't feel jealousy. That it's very, very rare. And I think, As you are going to non-monogamy, there are things that you are going to have to experience, like jealousy, like scheduling differences, you know, like bandwidth management of like how much time and brain space are you allocating to your partners and all that kind of stuff. And I think just going into it knowing, like, those are part of non-monogamy. And I can give you a bunch of lists that goes with monogamy, you know, but you're just like, these are the pitfalls. And this is one of the conversations, like, these are one of the first sessions I have with my clients. Like, here is where people thrive. Like, this stuff really, like, for the right person, it really makes it for them. And here's the stuff that pretty much everybody stumbles over, you know, like, so like, let's make strategies. How are you going to deal with that? How are you going to deal with that night when your partner's out on a date with somebody else and you're home alone? Like, what is the plan? Are you watching a movie? Are you calling a friend? Are you going on a, you know, a friend's date? Are you, you know, painting? What are you doing? You know?
Yes. No, that makes complete sense to me. You know, I think that I didn't think about that in advance. Certainly, I just didn't have that in my mind, but I'm a very good problem solver. Again, professionally, out in that world, I get paid lots of money to make important decisions and to problem solve my way out of things. And that's how my brain works. And so I also think when I'm in an uncomfortable situation, my brain is like, no, there's an out here. There's a way not to feel pain anymore. We just haven't figured it out yet. As opposed to just accepting it. This is why my suffering is that I am not accepting the pain.
Yes. Right?
So I can give you many examples. Two of that come to mind immediately are, my daughter is a preteen now and going to be entering into her teenage years. There's already lots of rolling of the eyes that are happening, right? Lots of, you know, I can see via her eyes that she thinks that I'm stupid and that she is, you know, amazing and all the things. Now, this is universal. This is developmentally appropriate, right? She needs to start individuating herself so that she can eventually go on and have her own life. I know these things. I've studied child development. Like, I know. And yet, with every roll of the eyes, I'm immediately furious. Immediately. Like, you're being disrespectful. Absolutely not. We will not do that in this house. Like, and she's 12. I have many years, Effie Blue, ahead of me of rolling eyes. I need to get at peace that this is going to happen. I have to stop biting it.
Exactly. Because you're suffering. This is exactly what suffering is. Yeah.
And I think that it's not only in the beginning when I first decided to, you know, have a child, understanding what would come from that. But there's a reevaluation that needs to happen at each stage of a relationship or at each stage of life to say, this new thing is coming. Let me gear up for that. You know, another example I can think of is within my relationships, that in my mind, we're going to have sex forever and it's going to be amazing sex. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, 4 years in, when my partner's like, I think I'm good for right now. I've been shocked. Mm-hmm. Literally, I mean, you have been on the other line of those phone calls from me saying, how could this be? This doesn't make any sense. There's a way out of this. I just haven't figured it out. And I did not stop and reevaluate and think about the stages of relationships and prepare myself for the pain of not having as much sex, for example, as I would want to have and what that looks like. So yes to acknowledging, and also like a reassessment and reevaluation and a reacknowledging and a reacceptance.
Oh, for sure. That's why it's subscription. That's why it's an ongoing effort. I think that's why it's important to think about it in that way.
Yeah.
So I have like a 4-step suggestion, right, of how to do this. Because we talked a lot about that everything comes with pain and suckiness, and that is also true. So what do we do about that? Mm-hmm. First is just acknowledging that no matter what you decide, there is going to be some pain. Like there is no, you can almost like rest assured, I would say, that there's no choice, there's no answer with no pain. So you can be like, you can let that pressure go. You can't be like, I didn't pick the option with no pain. There is no option with no pain, right? So like, let that pressure go and acknowledge that there's going to be pain with whatever you decide. So I think that's the first one. And then imagine how you will respond to this pain, right? Like really think about, when I experience this thing, what is this going to be like? So when my partner is working their regular 18-hour days and I'm home alone for yet another evening, what will that feel like? What will that feel like? And what can I do? How am I going to deal with it? Right? Like, what am I going to do? So really like take on that pain, take on that suckiness, sit with that pain and be like, in my worst day, what is that going to be like? Right. Mm-hmm. And then like do that self audit and think about, how are you going to handle it? Do you have the resources? Do you have what you need? Are you the type of person who can do that? Right. Are you the type of person who thrives on their own with a lot of like alone time and don't really need, you know, a partner by their side? Right. You know, if we're talking about non-monogamy, are you the type of person that can, you know, really work on regulating their emotions and dealing with their jealousy? Like, are you that person, right? And do you want that for yourself? Like, that's really important too. Do you want that for yourself, right? Which leads me into my third one. It's like, get very clear about what each choice will afford you, right? Mm-hmm. So I put up with this, I deal with this pain. In return, I get this. And I don't mean that in a transactional way, right? It's not like I do this, you know, I do this and I must get this. But it's like big picture stuff. Like, I am putting up with this thing because, you know, this relationship affords me, again, not in a transactional way, but affords for you, like the thing that it creates. Because you're making a choice. You're making a choice for a reason. Let's just get clear about why you're making that decision, right? And it could be something like, you know, let's go back to this relationship with the 18-hour workday, right? This person is providing you with a certain type of relationship or a certain type of safety and security, whatever it is. And you're like, okay, the 18-hour day is, I put up with the 18-hour days because of this, right? Non-monogamy. Mm-hmm. You know, the jealousy, the insecurity, the unknown, right? You deal with that stuff because you enjoy the freedom that you get. The variety feeds your soul. Seeing your partner, you know, in new relationship energy elates you, and you kind of see them like be so happy that it makes your day, right? Like, you just need to get clear about what each of these decisions afford you.
Yeah. And we do that. We do that in other ways, but I think to your point about being more intentional, like, I have a dog and there are many times where I'm completely annoyed, where she keeps barking or she, you know, wants to go out. We just went out, all those things. But I will definitely deal with those things in order to have her in my life, right? Or when my wife like is convinced that she is going to eat leftovers, even though I know that she is not. And every day that passes, I see it there and I ask her, are you going to eat this? And she says, yes, I'm going to eat it. And 2 weeks pass and it's still in the refrigerator. And then I have to clean out the refrigerator. In those moments, I remind myself that I'm going to accept those types of inconveniences because I love her and the life that we've built together. So I do think all day long we are making some compromises for the bigger good. I think what you're saying is about really getting clear around these bigger decision points, acknowledging the sucky that's going to happen, really being thinking critically about when I'm in a sucky space, how do I respond? And then am I willing to put up with that for this other thing?
Right. It's not even a question. It's like, I am willing to put up with that. Like, I subscribe to this. Right. Because that's when you stop from your pain turning into suffering. Because you're like, this is how it's going to be. I'm not attached to the other version of this. I'm going to roll with it as it comes. I actively subscribe. And I think it's then you've made a decision that feels good and that you can live with. And maybe not necessarily think about the grass is greener and should I make, like, because it's the same process for every decision that you're going to make. There's going to be suckiness. You're going to have to deal with the suckiness. You got to get clear and real about it. And then you're going to have to subscribe. Every single decision you make comes like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Step four, the last of the bunch, to actively subscribe. And I think in those moments, for me at least, I feel more in control. I feel less like something has happened to me and I have made this decision. And I go back to what you said in the beginning about the pro and cons list, which I make many of, but that there's also that like sitting in the quiet, that intuitive piece that you were saying to say all the things are going to be hard. Which one just feels right? Sure. Like moving the list aside and think like really thinking about it and saying like what feels more authentic to me, what feels more aligned with who I am in this moment, knowing hopefully that you can change your mind with certain things with complication, but change your mind in the future.
Yeah.
But at least you're choosing it then.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting something that you said about like I love my wife. So I have the same, so it's a little bit more intellectual for me, right? So my 15-year younger partner, yes, I love him, and on top of that, I am actively subscribing to the sucky that comes with the age gap. It's not really about whether I love him or not, right? Because I can be like, I love you.
Right.
But the thing, like, I love you, but this age difference and the pain, the suckiness that it comes with, I just can't live with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I can't subscribe. Like, it's going to become suffering for me. I don't want to put up the pain. So it's actually less about how you feel about the other person, but more about like the thing that you're subscribing, the thing that you have to live out.
Yes. Right?
And I think that's an important distinction.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. No, I mean, certainly for me, certainly both, right? That I love her. I don't love the leftovers that are in the fridge for a month, but I love the kitchen that we remodeled together. I love the home that we built together. I love the way that our values are aligned around how we want to show up in our home and in our life together. Like, I love those things in addition to gratefully also loving her.
Right. Exactly. And I think this is really to acknowledge those people out there who are like, I love this person, my partner, my parent, my kid, whatever. I just can't do the relationship part. I just can't. The pain is too much. The pain is suffering. You know, there's nothing that I can do to sit in it, to be okay with it. Therefore, you know, I'm not going to subscribe. And that's okay. And that's not about you. That's not about them. It's not about feelings. It's just about what you're willing to tolerate so you can thrive.
So there you have it. That is the down and dirty truth as we promised it. That there is no decision without consequence. There is no path that is perfect, and there is no choice that is pain-free. If you leave your relationship, your children might ache from the memory of what it was like to be together. And if you stay, your children might ache from the heartbreak of watching their parents tear each other down in between forced smiles. If you quit your job, you may feel financially insecure and worry about your worthiness. And if you stay, your time and your energy and your spirit might continue to wither away. If you tell your family the truth of who you are, you might lose their affection and it can change the way that they look at you. And if you lie, you could carry that lie inside of you, growing in weight and fear and resentment day after day. It is going to hurt regardless. So choose the path that is more aligned with your truth, because pain with peace of mind is better than pain with regret.
Hear, hear.
If you'd like to share your reactions to this conversation, you can start a conversation on our Facebook group at We Are Curious Foxes. You can also visit our website at wearecuriousfoxes.com for previous episodes, blog posts, and resources on related topics, all under the umbrella of love, sex, and relationships. There are bonus cuts and mini episodes and online workshops and a whole lot more available to you if you go onto Patreon at We Are Curious Foxes. And we would love for you to share this episode with someone who you think needs to hear it. If this conversation has meant something to you, then please leave a review for the podcast on Apple, Spotify, Audible, Stitcher, wherever it is that you're listening to. And if you haven't already, follow us and leave a rating. That is how the podcast algorithm decides if it's going to recommend our show to others. So we need your help in that. And then finally, if you have questions, stories to share, if you want to weigh in on your house of horrors, then you should share your stories with us. You can reach out to us via email, or you can send a voice memo to listening@wearecuriousfoxes.com.
This episode is produced by Effie Blue and Jacqueline Misla, with help from Yamur Erkishi. Our editor is Nina Pollack, who we would pick time and again with no regrets. Our intro music is composed by Dev Saha. We are so grateful for their work, and we're grateful to you for listening. As always, stay curious, friends. Curious Fox Podcast is not and will never be the final word on any topic. We solely aim to encourage curiosity and provide a space for exploration through connection and story. We encourage you to listen with an open and curious mind, and we'll look forward to your feedback. Stay curious, friends.
Stay curious.
Stay curious.
Stay curious.
Stay curious.
Stay curious.
Stay curious.
Stay curious.